style interview than a radio interview. And, you know, both Christine, Eric, and Jennifer Waitz, they know each other from their work on the radio preservation.
This is Doug Gillard of Guided by Voices, and you're listening to 90.7 FM, WGXC, Accra.
This is Tom Rowe with COVID-19 update, how you can help. While there are clear shortfalls in governmental reaction to the COVID-19 outbreak, local citizens are picking up some of the slack. WGXC is attempting to publicize and give a public platform to many local efforts to help. The River Newsroom has a roundup of several local efforts. There is a Facebook group called the Hudson Valley Mutual Aid Network, compiling information in a spreadsheet that will be shared with people trying to help in many different ways. The COVID Childcare Co-op Calendar is a social tool in the Hudson Valley for parents and other caregivers to find childcare. The Service Workers Mutual Aid Fund supports furloughed service industry employees who, quote, need funds for food, medical bills, childcare, or any other financial stressor, unquote. COVID-19 Freelance Artist Resources website lists free resources, opportunities, and financial relief available to artists. Sweet Relief provides financial assistance to career musicians facing illness, disability, or age-related problems, and they have set up a new COVID-19 fund. There are links to all these groups at the WGXC newsroom at WGXC.org, and please contact info@WGXC.org if you know about other individuals or organizations putting together relief efforts in the Hudson Valley so we can publicize their efforts and get more volunteers.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by Mid-Hudson Cable, serving Columbia, Greene, and Southern Albany counties with digital cable, high-speed internet, and cable phone services for homes and businesses since 1971. Mid-Hudson Cable, all the right connections on the web at mhcable.com.
Wave Farms WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Lillian Liu of Hudson, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
This is Tom Rowe with the WGXC News Update. Go to the newsroom at wgxc.org for more information about any of these stories. Nora Mishinik is reporting for Columbia Green Media that Greene County held its first public testing clinic May 16th for COVID-19 at Catskill Middle School. A total of 150 pre-registered county residents were tested for the virus, with priority given to symptomatic people and people who work in essential services. The Greene County Public Health Department partnered with the Greene County Office of Emergency Management to offer the testing, which officials say will be the first in a series of clinics to come. Office of Emergency Management officials confirmed the next opportunity for residents to be tested will be in Coxsackie in the coming weeks. That clinic will be combined with a mobile food pantry for residents who require food assistance. On May 8th, 80 people were tested at a clinic at Columbia Green Community College. Both Green and Columbia County residents were eligible for testing at that site, and Columbia County Public Health Director Jack said Public Health Director Jack Mabb. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com. The Daily Freeman is reporting that $640,296 in federal aid has been earmarked for broadband internet development in Columbia and Greene counties. U.S. Representative Antonio Delgado, May 15th, announced the award through the Federal Communications Commission from the Connect America Fund Phase 2 auction to Mid-Hudson Data Corp. Mid-Hudson Data will get the funds later this month and bring high-speed broadband service to 459 locations, Delgado said. Connect America Fund Phase 2 auction was created by the FCC to close the digital divide in rural America. Quote, we have much more work to do to make sure our communities are able to be connected and ensure these technological investments are built to last, unquote, Delgado said. New York was excluded from Phase 1 of the program, and Delgado said he led the effort to include the state the second time around. Read the full story in the Daily Freeman. The Columbia paper is reporting that the Chatham Central School District has three candidates running for three open seats on the Board of Education this June. Matthew Fish, Destiny Hallenbach, and Patricia Wilson are seeking three-year terms scheduled to commence July 1st. Fish and Wilson are incumbents. Current Board member Rachel Galvin is not seeking re-election. The annual board election and budget vote will be held June 9th across the state this year by absentee ballot. Read more about this story in the Columbia paper. The Hudson Arts Emergency Program, Saturday, May 16th, announced funding to 16 artists in the second round of emergency funding. The community-funded project supports individual artists for work that speaks to life in Hudson during the COVID-19 pandemic shutdown. A total of $10,000 has been awarded during the two rounds. The proposals funded consist of painting, photography, installations, musical compositions, performance, dance, field recordings, and video. Individual artist stipends during the second round include Victor Bloom, Valerie Schaff, Mark Shrivo, Rebecca Bohrer, Allison Fox, Victoria Benares, Sandra Loring, Emily Smith, James Ottery, Lydia Rubio, Jeremy Bullis, Suzanne Snyder, Jane Ehrlich, Pauline DiCarmo, Louis Smith, and Elise McMahon. The Hudson Arts Emergency Program is a project developed by the Hudson Development Corporation Emergency Cultural Task Force. The task force consists of Seth Rogovoy, Linda Mussman, Jonah Bokier, and Branda Maholtz. This has been the WGXC News Update. Go to the newsroom at WGXC.org for more information about any of these stories. The National Weather Service in Albany predicts a partly sunny Sunday with a high of 66 and a low around 48 on Sunday. Monday, there's a chance of showers. There's a 50% chance of rain with a high near 59, low around 45. Tuesday, there's only a 20% chance of rain, but it'll be mostly cloudy with a high of 54 and a low around 41. You're listening to the radio, WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, Hudson, radio for open ear.
Wave Farms WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Tina Sharp of Hillsdale, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
Ladies and gentlemen, we interrupt our program of dance music to bring you a special bulletin from the Intercontinental Radio News.
सर पे डाले है ये चुनिया क्यों हाँ क्यों हो सोनी सोनी सी कुड़ी नो मौज में रहने दे ना दुनिया क्यों हाँ दुनिया क्यों है किन्नी शानदार कुड़ी ये कर देगी कमाल इसे झूमने दे अपनी बीट दे कुड़ी नो नचने दे हाँ नचने दे तू आज लगाने दे ढूंके हाँ चुमके नचने दे हाँ नचने दे तू सारे या फिक्र नू छड़ के बंधन के कुड़ी नू नचने दे हाँ नचने दे तू आज लगाने दे ढूंढ के हाँ जम के कुड़ी नू नचने दे हाँ नचने दे तू सारे या फिक्र नू छड़ के बंधन के कुड़ी नू नचने दे ओहो पाजी ओ उखड़े उखड़े क्यों खड़े जी हंसता तो हंस देगी दुनिया भी हाँ जी ओ आए जो ऑन द फ्लोर कुड़ी तो खूब मचाए शोर तू भी झूम लेना इसकी बीट दे कुड़ी नू नचने दे हाँ नचने दे तू आज लगाने दे ढूंढ के हाँ जम के कुड़ी नू नचने दे तू सारे या फिक्रानु छड़ के बंधन के कुड़ी नू नचने नचने दे नचने दे आज लगाने दे ढूंढ के हाँ जम के कुड़ी नू नचने नचने दे नचने तारे या फिक्रानु छड़ के बंधन के कुड़ी नू नचने दे
Welcome, radio listeners. You're listening to Bound by Books Youth Radio on WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, and Hudson, listener-supported radio for open ears. I'm Emily. I'm the director of the Hudson Area Library, and I'm from Hudson.
I'm Amelia. I'm a student at Hudson High School, and I'm also from Hudson.
Yeah, I'm Mishuna, also from Hudson High School.
I'm Lena. I am a student from MCS Middle School, maybe.
Maybe.
My name is AJ. I go to school at Libri, and I'm 9 years
old. Sounded funny if without I said the years
I'm 9 centuries old.
You're 900 years old. You're so old. Anyways, we're here every week talking about books.
Books we love, books we hate.
Bookish things.
Yep.
I'm sorry, I said bookish things because I had to rush it so that no one else would say it before me.
And so we're going to do that this week. We're going to talk about some books and bookish things, perhaps. I actually don't know what everyone's going to talk about. It's a mystery.
Mm-hmm.
Does anyone have a mystery to talk about? No mysteries?
Not really, no.
I want to read a good mystery.
Mm-hmm.
They're fun.
I love mysteries.
I hardly ever solve them before the end. But when I do, I feel really smart. And I like that.
I hate when mysteries end up on a cliffhanger.
Yeah. I've had that with some books where it's in the first book in a series. And I like when the first book in a series has a clean ending, so you could just stop right there, but you want to read the next one so badly that you go in. But I hate when they leave you with a cliffhanger.
Yeah.
Then you feel pressure to read the next one. And I don't know. Even if it was a great book, that pressure is not fun. But anyways, does anyone have anything interesting to talk about that they've been reading?
Well, I have a book of books.
A book of books?
An anthology, then.
More like book of stories, but all these stories could be made into books. And I like it because you can choose any page and you're in a different story.
What's the title of the book?
It's in a series. This is volume 4. The Bookshelf of for Boys and Girls, Stories and Songs from Many Lands.
Hmm.
It has some Greek mythology in here and stuff.
I do love Greek mythology.
I feel like I've read every single one of those stories and I'm trying to find a different one.
Do you have a favorite one you've read so far?
The Sword of Demoslos.
What's that about?
So it was about a king and a not-so-rich person who traded places, and then the not-so-rich person, well, they traded places for only one day, and then the not-so-rich person got scared because there was a sword hanging only by one horsehair on top of his head. And he said, "I want to leave!" And the king said, "I sit under that chair every day, and I'm afraid unless some move might kill me." And then it said, "Okay, I don't want to be a king anymore. Goodbye."
Yeah, it doesn't seem very safe.
I know.
No. It doesn't.
In general, I wouldn't sit beneath a sword, but definitely if it was just held
up.
He
didn't look up until it looked like it was about to break.
Ooh, that's really when you shouldn't look up.
I know.
Ouch.
Do you have a book to talk about?
I do. I just finished a really good audiobook called The Mighty Heart of Sunny St. James by Ashley Herring Blake. And I had read another book by Ashley Herring Blake, I think last year, called Ivy Aberdeen's Letter to the World, which I really liked. And I really like this is one where I judge the book by its cover. She has these cute little like cartoony covers.
Oh, that's so cute.
That are really pretty, have like fun designs. And it often has the back of a person's head, which is interesting. So it's like you get a peek at the characters, but you don't get to see a face. So you don't like have to imagine a person exactly how they look on a cover. But yeah, so it's called The Mighty Heart of Sunny St. James. And as you might guess, the main character's name is Sunny St. James. And she is 12 years old and she's just gone through heart surgery. So she's just getting out of the hospital. And while dealing with, you know, recovery from heart surgery, and knowing how close she was to death before, She's also dealing with reconnecting with her mother, who had left when she was younger. She's been raised by a woman named Kate, who is sort of her mother in the absence of her birth mother. And so she's just getting to know her mom. And then she's also meets a new friend named Quinn, who she's getting to know, and also dealing with the repercussions of having told her friend Margot, who had been her best friend for forever. She had opened up to her friend about how she had thought about kissing girls, and her friend betrays her. So she's also dealing with the loss of that friend.
One of things on my 100 things that I want to do in my life list.
What?
Tell a friend a secret and then have them betray me.
Yeah. So it's, you know, you get to see her summer of all of this going on. There's also some fun things. Her new friend Quinn is really cool. And her mom, I forget what her exact job is, but she does a lot of like ocean-based work. So she gets to go out on the ocean, and her biological mother, who she's reconnecting with, is a surfer. So she gets to learn how to surf. And then she and her friend Quinn are on a mission to have their first kisses that summer. So they make a pact that they're going to figure out how to have a first kiss. So it was a really fun story, but also has a lot of like heart, and it's a nice balance of like, it's not too heavy, but has some like tough moments, because life has some tough moments, especially when you're 12 and going through heart surgery. Mm-hmm. And it's a nice middle grade novel too, that it's not too young and it's not too old. Somewhere it's like a nice tween read.
It sounds good.
Yeah, I liked it a lot. So yeah, Mighty Heart of Sunny St. James by Ashley Herring Blake. That's the second book by her that I've really liked, so I'll have to try out another one. I think she had another one that came out last year that sounded good too, called Girl Made of Stars. When did that come out? I don't know. Never mind. Oh yeah, it came out in 2018. So who else has a book to talk about?
Our creative writing unit is wrapping up, and we have to make a portfolio of all our favorite works from class. And I don't know if Mashuda has anything to add to that, because she's in class with me. But what works are you thinking of putting in?
I don't know. I think I'm going to put like some of my poems there and one of the story that I wrote. I'm not sure. I haven't looked at that yet. What are you putting in?
Probably the opposite on your side. More stories than poems, because poems aren't my strong suit.
We've heard some of your poems on the show and they were very nice. But
I don't consider them my strongest thing. Yeah. I usually don't like the poems I write.
So how are you deciding? Are you reading through everything?
Yeah, I have two that I'm probably most definitely going to put in, which is the fairy tale piece and one of the short horror stories I wrote. I'm not sure what the other two are going to be, because for this portfolio, you have to write specifically about what inspired your story, what influenced you, etc., stuff like that.
So you both have to pick the ones that you're proud of and then also ones that you feel confident in writing about.
Yeah. And honestly, I don't know if I'm very proud of my fairy tale rewrite, but it got a good grade and I can confidently write about it, but I don't know how much I liked it.
I forget. Did you do Cinderella?
Yes, I did do Cinderella. Yeah.
Did it come out creepy? I know you were thinking about taking a creepy...
It was certainly creepy. I almost wish I had more time, because I feel like the way I wrote it, I could have written really good slow burn horror about it, but because it had to be a short story and kind of concise, I didn't write as much detail as I think I could have, which made me kind of sad and made me feel like I lost some of the effectiveness.
I guess you can always revisit it if you really want to. Someday yeah. in life. Not for your grade, but you got a good grade already anyway, so.
Yeah.
Yeah. So about Lena, do you have anything to talk about today?
Yeah. So remember how I told you guys the Chinese version of Cinderella?
Mm-hmm.
So the second part was like she went to the ball and she heard her stepsister telling her stepmother, oh, doesn't that kind of look like Yan Shen? And then Yan Shen got super surprised and worried that her mother would figure it out. So she ran away, dropping one of her golden slippers. And then she was very worried because her fish stopped talking to her. Well, her fish bones stopped talking to her. And so she knew what she had to do. So, like, while she was, like, being very sad, and she's like, wow, my fish bones aren't talking to me. Many women were coming and trying to get the slipper on because Prince found the slipper while she was running away. And he was like, I want to marry that woman, even though I just saw her. Because love at first sight is something that actually exists. Logic, I guess. And so women came, and they left. And so she had an idea. She would steal it back. So she went to go steal it. And then the king sent out guards. But then he told them to stop. And he told them to go follow her. So they could know where she lived. And so she hid the slipper under her bed with the fish bones. And so the king came in. And long story short, she became a queen. And her evil stepmother and stepsister lived in a cave. And Yan Shen found out that they died because of a rock slide.
Oh, dear.
Yeah.
Hey, I read that book.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was funny at the end how they got hurt by a rock slide. But I think it would have been even more interesting if it had been an avalanche of snow. They would have frozen to death instead of been pounded to death.
It's, like, interesting because it's kind of out of nowhere, it almost sounds like, where it's like, by the way, the stepsisters are dead now. It's just very sudden.
By the way, not only did they have to go and live in a cave, but then they died in the cave.
Yeah.
Whatever happened to the fish bones?
They're alive, and then, oh my god, they died in a rock slide.
I don't really know. They, like, left out the fish bones, but, like, I'm just gonna guess that she took the fish bones with her.
I hope they lived happily ever after, the fish bones.
Yeah.
Happily dead forever.
The fish bones were truly the most compelling character in this tale.
And so I had to write what was my favorite part. And so I put my favorite part was when the fish died.
No!
And then my sister was like, maybe don't write it because it sounds like you want death and destruction. And so I was thinking about, like, saying when the stepsister and stepmother died, but then I just chose that part where it was like when the man floated in the air because, like, I want to fly.
Hmm.
I don't want to walk anymore.
That's fair.
I've read, like, less books than I have had dreams this week that could probably make into books. I've had really, really weird, wild dreams, and it's so strange.
Do you write them down when you
I do. I have a little dream book. When I can remember, I do write them down. I try to date them, but sometimes I forget the date that I've had the dream, so I just write them. I have a little dream book next to my bed.
That's cool.
Can you show it to us?
Yeah, it's just it's not very interesting, and I'd have to get up to show it to you, but it's just a small little mint green moleskin notebook, and some of the things I've dreamt about have been, like, one was a nightmare. One was, like, a very vivid nightmare where I was, like, driving down a road, and there were too many stop signs. Like, they weren't stop signs just at intersections. Like, there'd be stop signs just in the middle of this straight road. There were no turns or anything, and I had to stop at every stop sign, otherwise something bad would happen. But there was also, I also knew something was chasing me. So I knew something was chasing me. I didn't know what was chasing me, but I knew deep in my heart that something was chasing me, but I also had to
stop. And then you had to stop at every stop sign, and it could have caught up to you?
That's basically, that was basically the whole dream. I don't remember when I woke up, but that
very
was,
very weird, but very scary.
I did not enjoy it whatsoever.
Yeah, that sounds like a lot.
The other dream probably would take forever to explain, so I'll talk about that after the show, because I don't want to take up the whole show with weird dreams I've had, because I've had a lot. So but does anyone else have any other books to share?
I think Mashuda, do you have anything?
Yeah. I want to share the book I read in school, Perfect Peace, by Daniel Black. I really love that book. So it's just that how the author, like, portrays that, you know, difference between nature versus nurture. So the mother doesn't have a daughter. And so when Perfect is born...
That is the name of the child, by the way. The child's name is Perfect.
He's a boy. the boy, and then like she always wanted a daughter, and then she doesn't tell like the brothers and the father that she is a boy. So the mother dresses perfect as, you know, as a girl clothes and makes him wear diapers. But then one day she told Perfect that he's actually a boy, and it's a whole scenario. And then that actually hits Perfect deeply that, you know, he's not perfect anymore, because like he was always the only girl in that house, and every like the father, the brothers always loved her, but now he's thinking himself that he's not perfect. And it's interesting how like nurture plays a very important role than nature. Perfect, he himself like always knew that he was perfect, he was beautiful, he was a girl, that his family called him perfect, but now he's not, he's thinking himself that he's not perfect.
It's a very good book. I remember reading it, and while it was not like, it was a difficult book to read, it was a very good book to read. But yeah, that's basically is the story where this mother named, what was the mom's name?
I forgot too,
which is funny because I think she's a pretty important character. Yeah. But I think her name may have been Eva May.
That's yeah. Emma Jean.
Emma Jean. Oh, Eva May is
Emma Jean's mom. Eva May is the, yeah. May is the grandmother. She is a character though.
Eva May is a grandmother.
No, Eva May isn't the grandmother.
Yes, the girl.
Oh my gosh, girl. That's the girl.
Eva May is the girl like that.
It was wild. This book is absolutely wild. Emma Jean is Perfect's mother. She has, I think, 6 or 7 boys. I can't remember, but she has a lot of sons.
That's a lot of boys.
Six sons. Technically 7 because of Perfect, but she has her 7th child and is sure it's going to be a girl. Is so sure it's going to be a girl. So when she has it and the midwife is like, no, it's a boy, she quite essentially in the first chapter basically just looks at the midwife and is like, no, it's not. It's a girl. This is my daughter. You can't do anything about it. Leave my house. And she does. The midwife leaves and she raises Perfect as a girl for several years until she finally can't hide it anymore.
And I think what Emma Jean does that because, like, when she was little, she went through a lot of, like, trauma and, you know.
Yeah.
And
also her, it goes like, into Emma Jean's, it goes into Emma Jean's abuse and how she may have wanted to treat a girl, like, the way she never got to be treated.
So that's why. But then when Perfect finds out and he blames everything to the mother, but she wasn't in her correct mental state. I feel like it's kind of her upbringing, basically. It's not her. It's, you know.
Yeah,
how she was raised and, you know, like all the trauma and everything just plays in her mind, you know.
The book definitely goes into some pretty like deep themes, but it's very good if you're willing to like endure it all.
It's not like she never hurt the children, but like the father blames it on her and almost
it was very an incredible book. We couldn't go into like in depth into all the themes as much as we'd want to without spoiling a good portion of the book, but it is very, very good.
And that's when you read for school.
It's also sad too. Like, I understand why would Emma Jean do this. I know it's not right, but like,
yeah,
when everyone found out, like they didn't even like people didn't think she was human anymore. Like she was not allowed to go outside, and her neighbors would criticize her. And
my favorite part of the book was the point when Perfect starts to realize he isn't a girl, that he was never a girl. So then it goes into like this whole theme of like, what does he do now? He's always been raised to think that he was going to grow up and get married to a man. He ends up liking
by the friends,
boys as like well. His brother. But then that brings up like the question of like, would he have always grown up to like boys and girls, or if he would have, even if he wasn't raised as a girl? It's such a good book, and I don't want to spoil anything, Mashuda. Yeah. It's such a good book. So, it's absolutely insane
the
book.
The book just ends. I hope, like, we get to know, like, what happens to Perfect.
It ends so abruptly.
Yeah.
It's so weird. I have such a love-hate relationship with this book.
Like, I wish, like, there was a sequel, or, like, we know what happened.
Yeah.
I really wish that there was a sequel, and I could, like, find out that he's okay. Just to be sure,
from
my own mindset, I want to know if he's okay.
What if the sequel would show that he's not okay? Would you still want it?
Then I would cry.
I almost feel like it ended perfectly the way it did. But at the same time, there is a part of me that's like, oh, why did it end like that?
A That sounds like an interesting book. I'd never heard about it until you talked about it. I think you mentioned it briefly on a past show, and I was like, I've never heard of that book before. It's interesting when that happens with assigned reading.
Yeah. Is there a movie to it?
No. There's not. Trust me, I looked. I did look.
Well, you can all dream up what the sequel is. You could write your own fan fiction sequel and give Perfect a happy ending.
Yeah.
But we're out of time for today. But we'll be back next week to talk about some more books. And we hope everyone has a great week with lots of quality reading time.
Yay!
Bye.
Bye.
Happy reading.
Next, we have an interview from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
An opportunity here to establish a $200 billion Heroes Fund, which will provide for bonuses for hazard pay because people have really put their lives on the line. There is also an opportunity here to address the hospitals and nursing homes, healthcare facilities, our mental health service providers, with a $100 billion fund that will go towards additional relief for those institutions. We have $75 billion that will go toward additional testing, tracing, and treatment, a three-pronged approach that will speak to not only containing the virus, but identifying with requirements for study and reporting that will enable us to see the demographic profiles of where this disease is impacting us in the country and to which population. So a lot of work done here to go forward with efforts that respond to various institutions and organizations, including our Postal Service, which receives an amount of investment here with this bill that will enable them to continue to deliver mail, which also responds to deliveries of medications for many of our shut-ins. So this is an inclusive bill that really responds to, again, our lives and our livelihood. It is keeping us as a nation strong and functioning. And these are essential workers that provide essential services that make our quality of life what we expect it to be. We as Americans are a tough group. We are determined. We are resilient. This responds to the great bravery, the courage, and certainly the resilience that people have shown as we've worked through these several weeks and months combating this pandemic. It is far from over. We hope the testing and the accuracy of contact tracing and treatment will enable us to achieve the final goals of conquering this very, very challenge of our lifetime. This legislation responds with appropriate support to those who have led us through these challenging times, those who have put their lives on the line so that we can enjoy the essential services, receive the essential services we require. So it is about providing assistance to states which provide essential services to our cities, our counties, our local governments that make our daily activities, our quality of life what it is. And it's certainly about providing the resources and the guidance, the efforts to assist our hospitals, our nursing homes, and our mental health service providers, those facilities, those healthcare institutions that are in the midst of responding to the individual treatment that obviously is required by far too many.
You mentioned some statistics about the death totals, the case numbers.
Sure. Nearly 87,000 people have succumbed to COVID-19 virus, and some 1.4 plus million cases have been determined. And so it tells us, those numbers are staggering, and it continues to challenge us as we, as a nation, respond to this pandemic.
Thank you, Congressman. And for those uninitiated, the chimes behind the Congressman are known as the Capitol Bells, and they signal that votes are upcoming. So, Congressman, do we have just a couple of minutes to take a few questions before?
Absolutely. Absolutely. We need to vote shortly, but they're doing it in alphabetical sequence with clustering of members that will hopefully be masked as they go to the floor to vote.
I have a question.
Hey, Dan.
Dan Bazile here from Spectrum News. Quick question for you. I understand that Senator Mitch McConnell has been doing the rounds talking about this bill. And he said that we need to take a pause on more of those funds, of those relief packages. So what does that mean for this bill in the Senate?
I think that basically as this is unveiled and when people realize the assistance that's provided, they'll see it as critical and essential. And I think like any development of public policy, I'll reach back to the days of Abraham Lincoln, who always said that this is driven by public sentiment. And I think public sentiment here will challenge our counterparts in the United States Senate to respond accordingly. I think that there will be growing support when people recognize what relief is provided our states and local governments, our hospitals, our nursing homes, our mental health providers. When they see that assistance, when they see the assistance for Hazard Fund, for those who really embraced enormous amounts of courage, they'll respond favorably and they'll advance, I think, their support for this legislation. Just as an individual congressman, I have heard from several who work in local government, people who maintain our water and sewer systems, people who are there as caseworkers, providing essential social services for families, healthcare workers, certainly frontline people who have been in the midst of this pandemic, from teachers, from firefighters, from police officers. People have been reaching out to us, understanding that, you know, when we look at state governments, it might look like an accounting ledger, but when you break it down to the human element, it's essential human services, and it's provided by professionals out there who have been really, really heroes, as the act would designate, and they need to be responded to. I would share, too, with, I think it's an important stat, while this is a major bill that provides resources from many, many perspectives, there is, to the local government element, a total of $1.3 billion estimated to come into the capital region. And so that relief at the local level translates into continuation of essential services and the relief to potential relief to the property taxpayer.
This is Emily from the Albany Times Union. And I wanted to ask about the funding for childcare in this bill, Congressman. Many House Democrats pushed for $50 billion to support childcare as these businesses have been closed and you know, people rely on them and need them to be able to get back to work through reopening. But I understand that the HEROES Act only includes $7 billion for childcare, and some Democrats expressed disappointment in that. I was wondering if Speaker Pelosi has addressed that in caucus conversations about why only $7 billion was included on that provision, and how you think that sets you up to negotiate on childcare funding with the Senate.
Well, I think you raise an important concept of putting a bill together. You know, I hope my colleagues and I don't reject it for what's not in there, but really respect it for what is in there. I, too, would like to see much more for childcare because of the reasons you cited. But they try to contain within certain parameters the amounts that we provide for the given elements of the bill. This is not the last iteration, I got to believe. There will be other concepts coming down the road because we are in the midst of a pandemic. And so we will measure what assistance that is provided in this bill will do. And if it falls far short, I am confident that we'll be there with additional funds that will make up for that shortfall. But childcare becomes an essential bit of funding and a resource for working families in this country who are impacted by the need for quality childcare opportunities.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, sir. Andrea, you had a question.
Hello, Congressman. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
This is Andrea Cunliffe from the Sanctuary for Independent Media in Troy, New York, WOOC radio station. I'm curious about where we will find the funding for this bill. There's so many things that are needed in this country, and I know we have a financial problem, so how will we be able to fund this bill?
Well, you know, the efforts through all of this pandemic will come to that payment mechanism, and we'll be working for a very progressive formula. Obviously, you know, the efforts in the House have expressed our ideals, our values for America's working families, and that moment will come. But for now, there is no way that we can afford not to do something. This is about keeping the nation afloat. It's about responding to our lives and our livelihoods. And that is the important driving force with this legislation. And the two houses and the two parties on the Hill will make it their job to, in, I hope, a progressive fashion, come together with the payment for what we have here. But right now, the thinking is We cannot afford not to invest in our families.
Thank you.
Thank you, Andrea. Congressman, any concluding thoughts?
No, I'm looking forward to casting a vote in favor of the legislation today. It's taken a lot of work, several conferencing calls with technology, assisting us in that effort, repeated opportunities to work with all of my colleagues to add to the bill, to offer your sentiments, to exchange the testimonies that I've received, that we've received in our office. I'm just grateful for all the input that we would have received from the district that had advanced this notion of assistance for our communities and for our heroes. And it'll be a proud moment to cast a vote to keep us afloat. This nation needs to understand, the leadership in Washington needs to understand, this is a national challenge. It deserves and requires a national response, a national strategy, and a national commitment. And this is a part of that commitment and that respect that is shown to each and every person that has maintained the operations of this country in the midst of one of the most challenging, if not the most challenging, times this country has had.
Thank you, sir. So I'll just add thank you to everyone for joining us this morning. Congressman, we should let you go cast that vote. Thanks, everybody.
My guest today is Dr. Brenda Robinson, Doctor of Nursing Practice, who is the City of Albany Commissioner of Human Rights, founder and CEO of Black Nurses Coalition, president of the Arbor Hill Neighborhood Association, Albany Library Board trustee, and has worked more than 27 years with the Veterans Administration. Welcome, Dr. Robinson.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
You are a very busy and sought-out person. I've seen you on two health disparity panels this week that I'm aware of. I want to start and thank you for so graciously taking the time to speak with me today.
Sure.
So I understand you have a telemedicine practice. Can you talk about your practice and the community that you serve?
Yeah, sure. We've always had a community health virtual, and BNC has been around for so long now. Years are just passing by so quickly. But early on, we saw the need to incorporate telehealth. So that was one of our first focuses because we knew the need. In my experience with the Veteran Health Administration, I knew just how positive and effective telehealth can be. So instituting telehealth was very beneficial. It's also a cost savings, and it also provides a lot of access to folks who typically do not have that type of access. So it's been a plus all the way around. Since COVID-19, of course, you know about healthcare disparities and social determinants of health, which actually are so intertwined and creates a higher risk for folks with comorbid conditions to be at more risk for COVID-19. So being able to provide our virtual clinic, and we also included something called the Phone Buddy, because we were spanning so much and everyone did not have the same need. So we have grown at least by 60 to 70% with the Phone Buddy. And people are so comfortable. I get calls from all over. And we see a lot of issues because, of course, the people in our community, I serve an underserved community, majority minority. We have a lot of fear, a lot of different issues, a lot of distrust. And, you know, with COVID-19, there are so many unknowns. But one thing that we do know is that Black and brown people are dying.
Yeah.
So that's where you get the fear. And our phone rings, rings, rings. Whether we're out getting medication for someone who couldn't afford it or too scared to go out and get it, whether we're doing medication reconciliation, when it's folks wind up with so many medications, they don't know what to do with them. We still do the education because there's so many missed messages out there. We reassure, we do coaching. We do a lot of same things that we've been doing, but at a higher rate and more detail because I think our residents need more, right? But I even have situations such as I have one gentleman, an elderly gentleman who has a wound, but his healthcare providers didn't show up because they're afraid of coming in the building because of COVID-19. So, you know, this pandemic is causing so many difficulties and barriers and things that you may not have expected. So we have to be on it and ready.
So what are some of those things that are happening that you didn't expect?
Well, one is just like the gentleman I just mentioned, when he first got on our program, we had him all squared away with wound care and all these different things. Well, now what we thought was set is no longer set. So the folks that we deal with, things that we think are good are no longer good. When I get my client finally on board with taking their high blood pressure medication, right? They're doing a great job. And then 3 days go by and I'm checking on this person. I find out that they ran out of their medication, haven't been taking it, didn't want to speak up, and they couldn't afford to get the refill. Yeah. So some of those things are just falling by the wayside. Even with diabetes, a person run out of test strip, they are expensive if you don't have insurance. So I may have people who I've been coaching all along and they're doing great and they're just stellar. And then this hits, and now we're like 4 or 5 steps back because of this situation. More barriers have been put in place, so healthcare is more difficult.
So the African American communities and, you know, other Black and Brown communities have dealt with these health disparities, environmental injustice, food deserts, you know, poor housing for decades. Talk about the social determinants of health and what are leaders not getting? What do you think is just not happening?
Well, I think one of the things is, for one, healthcare disparities just have been around since decades. Even the Institute of Medicine even did a report, you know, decades ago, and so many other scholarly entities. So it's not like folks don't know. I find that it's a lot of excuses. Such as, you know, and I have, you know, we talk about different biases, and implicit bias is always labeled, but we have to remember about the explicit bias. Everything is not implicit bias. I'm tired of hearing that providers don't know. Yes, providers do know. So we all are aware of these healthcare disparities, so we need to address it. COVID-19, the devastation on Black and Brown people should not be new or a surprise, because it certainly is not a surprise to me. Holding people accountable oftentimes is difficult, but this is the time that we really have to hold folks accountable. The excuses have to stop. We have to acknowledge the lack of access to healthcare for Black and Brown people. That is real. And, you know, we really have to address it. I find that a lot of funding goes, may go for healthcare disparities on the basis of the demographics, but that funding does not go to that same neighborhood where the funding was obtained. So it's so many different issues and angles that are going on, but I'm not going to listen to elected officials tell me, oh, we need the data for COVID-19 so that we can address the healthcare disparities. You already have data about healthcare disparities. You already know the maternal mortality rate for Black women was 3.3 times more, a Black woman 3.3 times more likely to die from a preventable pregnancy as compared to a white woman. So we know these things. We already know about diabetes, where a Black person is 2 to 3 times more likely to get a limb amputated due to diabetes compared to a white person. You got all the data you need in regards to healthcare disparities. We need the action and we need the funding behind it. So we're not going to hide behind these stats. We're not going to hide behind, oh, I need this data, because you have the data.
So in that vein, Governor Cuomo did say he was now, yes, it's horrible, and we're going to do more for communities of color. What do you see coming up next? What would you like to see moving forward to improve the health?
I think moving forward, for one, I want to see some real accountability. And, you know, when I talk about accountability, I'm speaking about those folks who are making decisions, but I'm also speaking about people like me and people who look like me and other people in this community. Mm-hmm. You need to hold your leadership accountable. So when you go in that voting booth, and all of you do need to vote, because that's a big way to change things, but stop voting for people if they're not holding up their end of the stick. I mean, these are the people who you put in place to really be your voice. If they're not being your voice, then you know you need to make some changes. So one of the things, first and foremost, is really that accountability and holding people accountable. It's nice to like someone. You know, I like a lot of people, but not all those people do their job well. So, you know, and our lives are dependent on these people doing their job well. My life depends on it. So we have to be more serious and I think more actionable about, you know, what we do and how we do it. You know, also, let's not forget the transparency, the honesty, and the trust, because people of color do not have that trust, and we know why. We know about the medical apartheid. We know about the history and how black and brown people have been treated. So let's not pretend that we don't know really where we came from and what we're up against. So the trust issue is there, but we need to build on that. And I think leaders need to be purposeful in trying to build this trust, because it can be done, but we can't move forward without that. You also can't move forward with plans for people who look like me when you don't know me. You have to add me into the equation and give me a voice for an effective plan. Your plan is not going to be effective unless you include folks who look like me at the table.
So I apologize. We're going to have to wrap it up.
I just would like to thank you for having me on your show. It's very nice, and it's very nice to meet you. And, you know, this is a bad time, but I am glad that the cover is pulled off of healthcare disparities, and now folks are forced to acknowledge and take action.
Okay, and this is Michelle Masurgeon for the Hudson Mohawk Radio Network, and I thank you, Dr. Robinson, for your time, and stay safe.
Thank you.
That interview was from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
You're listening to The Morning Show on WGXC 90.7 FM.
90.7 FM. Accra, Catskill, Chatham, Coxsackie, East Chatham, West Chatham, North Chatham, and Old Chatham.
WGXE is asking if you are doing anything to help your community during the COVID-19 outbreak. Please get in touch with WGXE. Your community radio station is here to amplify your story, help corral more volunteers, or raise funds or supplies for the needy. If you are working to make sure local children who can't be at school still get fed, then tell us at WGXC 90.7 FM. If you are making sure local seniors are getting meals and deliveries, then tell us. WGXC will help you with your efforts. Email info@WGXC.org or go to the WGXC Facebook page, Twitter feed, or Instagram account and comment or send a message. You can talk about your project on the air, and we can tell our listeners and readers at WGXC.org how to help.
Listen!
Okay!
Use the boots to get through!
I'm walking here!
Don't make eye contact, whatever you do. Keep moving.
Are those guys sailors?
Show me your moves!
You better keep your hands off my hat!
Where'd my hat go?
Maybe you two can form a stupid hat club!
Objection!
Moon prism power!
If you've heard of it, it's already too mainstream for me.
Who would bear the whips and scorns of time?
Plant called and said if you don't come in tomorrow, don't bother coming in Monday.
Woohoo! A 4-day weekend!
Ladies and gentlemen, I give you the ninth wonder of the world, Timeless Vibes!
Sending sound data to idiot earthling radio host, inhabitant H491, Zetho. Timeless Vibes initiating in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.